Welcome back to your Valley Sports Plug. It's the Heat Check Podcast Live. Today is Tuesday, February 25th, 2025. And baby, we are back. My name is Chris Patrick, joined tonight by my co-host, Mr. Benjamin and VSP Tallman. We got a pretty full slate for you. Breaking news, the GOAT, Diana Taurasi, announces her retirement after 20 seasons. The Phoenix Suns continue their downward spiral, losing 9 of their last 12 games, sparking some speculation about some potential moves this offseason. Of course, your Arizona Diamondbacks began spring training this last week, and the question looms, who will be the opening day starter? Is it Zach Gallen? Is it newly acquired Corbin Burns? We're going to talk about it. But first, before I get into all that, I would ask you to please like and subscribe to this channel, and this video really helps us out with the numbers. Share it with all your friends. Also, follow us on all social medias, Instagram, X, TikTok, Threads, at AZ_VSP. Just Google Valley Sports Plug, and I promise you will find us. We go live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. for live streams like this. We also do our roundtables. We do a trivia stream once a month. And very special on occasion, you know, when we had our big Super Bowl live stream a couple weeks ago, we do season previews, stuff like that. So you don't want to miss out. If you got the notification bell, you'll always know when we're going live. And on top of that, you can always listen back on the replay here on YouTube or anywhere where podcasts are found on the audio only version. But fellas, I think I got my whole spiel out there. How are you guys doing this evening?
Chris Tallman, what a beautiful day it is. We're getting towards the end of February here. And the GOAT has hung him up. I think I was expecting it. I just wasn't expecting it today. I'm sure we're going to touch on it a little bit. But Tallman, how are you doing tonight, my brother?
Oh, gentlemen, it's another day in paradise. What can I say? I am one happy person that baseball's starting. I think everything else has just been, I mean, you said it, Suns on a downward spiral, but looking forward to this. I'm just happy to be here with you guys tonight talking some sports.
Amen, brother. I texted Mike. Expect me to go full doomer mode on the Phoenix Suns when we get there. So I'm kind of glad it's expected, but I'm glad we don't have to start off on too much of a negative note, depending on how you look at it. Diana Taurasi announcing her retirement. Real quick, I do want to say though, me and Tom were talking about it before I went live. What's up with it already getting into the mid 80s here in February? The weather is brutal, man. I wanted some hoodie season to last a little longer.
It's over. Yeah, I had to put the jackets in the back of my closet already, man. It's crazy. I know it's supposed to go down probably into the 60s next week, but that's it, man. The Valley is on fire. Not all of our sports teams are, but we literally just keep cooking over here, you know?
Oh, it's brutal. I was saying, man, my office is the hottest room in my damn house. I need a thermometer in here. I bet you it's like 85 degrees. But hey, what better temperature to do the heat check live podcast at?
Hey, that's true. We are doing the heat check podcast. So let's go ahead and get
so corny. I'm so sorry.
Hey, man. We're getting to that age where dad jokes are increasingly more acceptable in the realm of commentary.
Somebody's got to do it. I'm glad it was you, Tallman. Fits your brand.
Yeah, that's true.
You're welcome, guys. You're welcome.
Well, and as we know, Tallman knows ball. We'll see how well he knows WNBA ball. Like I mentioned, Diana Taurasi announcing her retirement after 20 seasons. Wanted to share with you just a small sampling of her many accomplishments. If you go look up her accolades, the list is extensive. She is a 3-time WNBA champion, 2 times final MVP, 11-time All-Star, 10-time WNBA All-First Team. She was the WNBA Rookie of the Year in 2004, a 5-time WNBA scoring champ, 6-time EuroLeague champ, 7-time Russian National League champion, 3-time NCAA champion, and I believe the only basketball player, male or female, to have 6 Olympic gold medals. You heard that right. 6 Olympic gold medals. We were just fussing about KD getting his 4th. DT has 2 more than he does. And like I said, the list goes on and on. Her accolades are aplenty. But Mike, I know you have close ties to the Suns organization. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, you've met Diana Taurasi. What were your thoughts on the announcement of her retirement?
You know, I think one of the last times that we had a round table, it's funny, we have a round table where the breaking news is the WNBA. The last time it was Brittany Griner leaving. But after that, I think we all kind of saw the writing on the wall, which made sense why Brittany Griner left to go, you know, try something new, because the Phoenix Mercury are going to be in a rebuilding period. But I was very, very happy, guys, when I heard this news. It's the closing of a chapter for the greatest women's basketball player, possibly the greatest basketball player that anybody has ever seen. And now we get to give her her flowers as she goes into the next phase of her life outside of playing basketball, man. Yeah, it's just crazy to think about, you know, the time frame. I was a freshman in high school when she was picked first overall in the 2004 WNBA draft. And Chris, you say I had ties with Diana, met her plenty of times. I was a ball boy for the Phoenix Mercury the first time that they won their title in 2007. So very, very fond memories of DT and Penny Taylor and all of those early Mercury legends. It's incredible to see what 20 seasons has done for her in the WNBA. But the biggest accolade, I think you already said it, the six-time gold medalist. I don't know if that will ever be touched. I'm just so happy and ecstatic that somebody of this magnitude is part of our culture here in Arizona. I can't wait until the day that she gets inducted first ballot into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. It's going to be tough. It's bittersweet, obviously, when you see a legend call it a career, but you just have to be so happy and ecstatic and praise everything that they've done for the Valley. The last thing I'll say is, you know how a lot of people talk about Caitlin Clark is changing the game? People have to remember Diana Taurasi basically started it. So very, very proud of everything that Diana has done. We're excited to see what happens in the future if she, you know, coaches or joins ESPN, becomes some kind of analyst. I'm sure she'll stick around the game. But we love DT, and congrats to her, man. That's for sure.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I mean, it's great to be able to give her flowers. And honestly, like, anybody, you know, in the Valley that knows Arizona sports would recognize that she is, like, right up there. She's on the Arizona sports Mount Rushmore, without a doubt. It, like, you talk about longevity in the Valley, there's really only two other players that spent their entire career here. I actually think only two other players, and it's great that they happen to also be great in Shane Doan and Larry Fitzgerald. 20 seasons with one team is unheard of for any sport. So when you get that, and not only was she here, she was great while she was here. Tallman, I said the list goes on and on of her accolades. She, I don't know if you know this, is the number one scorer in all of WNBA history with 10,646 points. Do you know how many points away number two is on that list?
If I had to guess, it's got to be at least 2,000 or 3,000.
Almost exactly 3,000. 2,950 points. Wow. Separation between her and the next closest person on the list. I mean,
that's just wild.
Anybody who tells you that Diana Taurasi isn't the GOAT, she like, literally, I heard someone say it even before she announced her retirement, like, she is the Michael Jordan of the WNBA. Like, literally that good. And it's incredible. And she really, like Mike said, revolutionized the sport. All these women that are playing great now, the Caitlin Clarks, Angel Reese, Paige Buckers, Asia Wilson, they all at one point, they for sure knew who Diana Taurasi was and likely looked up to her. She revolutionized how these women get paid. I mean, you can say what you will about the pay gap in the WNBA, but she was one of the first women I knew of to split time between America and Europe to get a little extra paper. And I mean, it shows. I mean, six-time EuroLeague champ to go along with her three WNBA championships is impressive. So not only was she the best, but she was hardworking to where, like, she got respect from even NBA players. Like, Kobe Bryant was a big fan. Devin Booker, obviously a big fan. All these men in the game recognize the greatness that is Diana Taurasi. So I just think it's awesome. Obviously, I grew up my basically whole time playing basketball as a kid into my adulthood, knew who Diana was and respected her game. So really, really happy that she's ending her career with the Suns and not going to play last few seasons elsewhere. But I don't know, Tallman. I mean, you know, me and Mike obviously are the Hoopers here, but do you have anything you'd like to say about Ms. DT?
Yeah, I was going to say, very impressed by you guys here. No, all jokes aside. Obviously, I didn't grow up as a basketball fan, but I grew up as a sports fan, and growing up in Phoenix, everybody knew who Diana Taurasi was. I mean, it was hard not to. And that's just impressive. 20 years is crazy. Even being 42 years old, I mean, she averaged almost 15 points a game in her last season, which at 42 is crazy. And then what got me was what Mike, what you said, she was the first overall pick when you were a freshman. Dude, I was 10, 11 years old when she started playing professional basketball. I was just a wee lad. It's just unbelievable when you have such a long, consistent career. I mean, and then just looking at the whole Caitlin Clark, where Caitlin Clark, if she's going to be the GOAT, she's got fucking Mount Everest to climb if she's going to steal that title away from DT. So, yeah, I mean, it's 42 years old. I don't blame her for calling it quits, but man, what a career.
Absolutely illustrious career, man. I can't wait to see what happens next for her. But guys, you know me, you can see behind me, I'm the shoe guy. The awesome thing about DT too is she's had a long partnership with Nike. Chris, I think you even touched on it. She started to revolutionize the way that women's professional players can get paid outside of just the game itself. You know, I think of multiple times that she's had a special PE with LeBron James, who a lot of people consider as the GOAT of basketball now after his illustrious career and what continues to happen on the floor for LeBron. But then the most recent thing, you know, when Devin Booker, our homegrown kid, gets his first shoe, and who is all over the marketing within that? Diana Taurasi, because he shows love to the legends around him of the Valley. And that's what Diana is at the end of the day. Props to her. I don't know what else you can really say, but just give praise and adoration to what she's done for not only the Valley, but for basketball as a whole. So we're going to miss her, but best of luck for whatever happens next for DT.
Exactly. I'm really excited as well to see what she does next. And I mean, it's like we're talking about her like she's dead, but she's not. She's still here. She's just not going to be playing basketball in the Valley. But I expect with her spending her whole career here, she's still going to be around the organization, making appearances. I'm pretty sure her and her wife live here with their kid. They have one or two daughters, something like that. But yeah, so expect that she's still going to be around and in conversations. But we unfortunately have to move on to our next more depressing topic, and that is your Phoenix Suns, who, like I mentioned, have lost 9 of their last 12 games. They're in a complete free fall. They have a game they're playing right now against the Memphis Grizzlies, and it's tied 67-67. Had a little bit of a lead at halftime. Looks like a 4-point lead at halftime. And I had a feeling, it reminds me, Mike, of the other week when we were watching the we weren't watching it together, but we were both texting while watching the Oklahoma City Thunder game. And we had a lead at halftime of that game. And I'm like, oh, wow, best team in the West. We're actually beating them at halftime. It's competitive. And then what'd they do, Mike? They completely fall apart in the second half. Don't play defense. Don't play good transition defense. Turnovers left and right. Passes fumbled between the legs and out of bounds. And it's just an embarrassing collapse. So, I mean, hey, up to a, 3-point lead now. Going to keep tabs on a win against Memphis would be huge. They're one of the best teams in the West right now, but it's like, I think Mike, you were saying it recently on one of our streams here that they have the toughest schedule in the back half of the season here, and they're going to have Milwaukee and Boston twice coming up in the next week. So I don't know. I just don't have a lot of faith when in our last, you know, couple games here, we lost to a terrible Toronto Raptors team and barely beat the Chicago Bulls. It's like, it's nothing to hang our hat on going into the later stretch of this season.
Yeah, let's touch on the basketball a little bit here, gentlemen. You know, if you were to tell me at the beginning of the season that the Phoenix Suns would be 27-30, 3 games under 500 and 2 games back of a play-in spot, I would have told you to smack me in the face, because there ain't no way it's happening. But last 10 games, 2-8, they have come out of the All-Star break absolutely flat after a lot of injuries. They've been absolutely horrible on the road all year at 11-19. And Chris, you touched on it. Their defense, they're one of the worst defensive teams in the league, man. Yes, they're 20th in the league, I guess, in points per game allowed at 115.3. But they give up the 7th most threes in the league made, man. Like, their same issues that they've had the past 2 seasons do not seem to have changed with the changing of the head coach, the changing of the role players. So a lot of the discussions now start to become on, what is the real key issue here? Is it the leadership on the floor? Are guys not buying into the system? Do guys even like each other at this point? And there's so many different discourses that come from a really fall flat season like this. You know, a lot of people on X start to go a little bit too crazy when they say, this is the worst Phoenix Suns team that I've ever seen. Guys, we went through the Eric Bledsoe days. We know what bad looks like. But this might be the most disappointing season that we've had in the past 20 years. Am I wrong on that? I mean, the expectations that we talked about, especially after forfeiting a future to win now after you trade for Bradley Beal, to where we are and where we stand and how we all kind of feel, Chris, which is where it sounds like you are, with not a lot of hope for, honestly, at this point, even making the playoffs, but definitely not a lot of hope of making a deep run in the playoffs, is just so crazy to see where we come from. And it's not even 5 years since the NBA Finals. And now we're going to have a tough stretch for the next 5 years. But Tallman, what have you been seeing from you're the ball guy, man. You know ball. Let's not joke around here. I know you've been keeping tabs on this Phoenix Suns team, man. What have you been seeing from them since the All-Star break?
I was keeping tabs, and then the last week and a half has just been has been a little rough. So fuck, guys. The main thing that's been jumping out at me is, and it's funny that you send that graphic, Chris, before earlier today about the starting lineup tonight, where it's just we're at that point where the head coach is just like this point in the season, you should not be tinkering this much with your starting rotation, right? It's like he's just sitting there throwing something at the wall, getting something to stick, you know? And it's at that point where you're starting Bol Bol. He's playing, granted, I know he's a fan favorite, but he's getting 25 to 30 minutes a game where it's like, and then what was up with all the G League guys coming in and getting time over Monte Morris? And it was just, what was going on, you know? Where are we at the point where we're just going to see what we got out of some of these players? I mean, I know, because last time I was critical about the usage of Ryan Dunn. I know he's been dealing with an injury, you know, and that's why he wasn't playing his normal starter minutes. But it's just, man, what happened to the start of the season coming in when we were like, all right, we got Tyus Jones, right? We have a serviceable backup who can play, you know, not a lot of minutes, but he can get in there and play point guard in Monte Morris. It's like, what happened to that? Where Tyus Jones was going to be the point, he's going to run the offense, and we're going to rely on our scorers to score and shoot more threes. You know, what happened to Grayson Allen? Why isn't he shooting a bunch of threes recently? Did he lose his shot after he was the best three-point shooter percentage-wise in the league last season? It's just, this team has no identity. And it goes back to, we've said it so many times where it's just, oh, let's play ISO ball. Let's have Kevin Durant just try to go one-on-one and beat someone and score with a mid-range fader or Devin Booker to – I mean, Devin Booker can't shoot fucking three. I don't know. I mean, dude, he's just been it's crazy when you talk about Devin Booker because you're like, he's at that point in his career where he's supposed to get better and better every single season, but it seemed like this season he hasn't taken that next step to be an all-around superstar, right? I mean, he doesn't make an all-star team again. So, but it's just, it's like, because what did we start the season? Were we 9-2, 8-1 at one point? It's like we came off hot. You know, granted, you could look back at the schedule and see it who we were playing. But ever since then, and Durant getting hurt, the wheels just fell off, and this just hasn't been the same team. And then just the usage of some of these players and the rotations have just been, I don't know. It's one of the most disappointing seasons since I've been watching. The most disappointing season because the expectations were huge. You have the largest payroll in the NBA, and there's no excuse. I mean, when I saw this is where I realized I was getting to a point of my bitterness because what happened when the Kevin Durant trade happened? I was all for it. You don't pass up an opportunity to get. He's gonna be at the end of the day one of the top five best players to ever play the game, right? One of the best shooters. He can score on anybody. You don't mess up that opportunity. But now, because we were split, so now this is when all the Suns fans come out and they go, hey, what about that trade we made 2 years ago where we absolutely mortgage our future? We traded away two key pieces to a championship team that ended up the next season, or excuse me, a team on a championship run that we lost in the finals, and then a team the next season that had the best record in the league. You got rid of two key players from that team. This is where they start coming out of the woodworks and saying, hey, that trade really set us off on the wrong road. And we were in that win now spot where now I think all the air is out. I'm at the point you're 27 and 30. Even if we make a plan, how do you guys feel about some of these teams that we'd be on the cusp with? And we're in a one and done. Dude, I don't feel confident at all. Even if we get to a best of five series, do you think right now this team has the wherewithal to play and be more athletic than some of these younger teams? I mean, the Raptors can't, they have a terrible offense. They're like 18 and 37. They can't win games, but they're a hell of a lot more athletic than this old Suns team.
Now that's a great point there, Tallman, because there was a point in time, even just probably like a year ago, where my mindset was that the Suns could more or less skate through the regular season as long as they showed up and were ready to play in the playoffs. And for my money, it was like a shoe-in. It was a sure thing that we were going to make the playoffs, no problem. However we get in the playoffs, these guys will turn it on and they'll play playoff basketball at a high level. That belief for me is completely out the window. I am right there with you. I have zero faith that this team could make any impact in the playoff whatsoever. And I mean, you're right. It's easy to look through rose-tinted glasses at the very recent past and how successful this team was when we still had Ayton and Chris Paul and Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson and how fun those teams were, setting franchise records, making it to the NBA Finals. But people forget how bitterly that ended, where DeAndre Ayton disappeared, didn't show up for his team, was butting heads with your main superstars in Devin Booker and Kevin Durant mainly. Chris Paul was in and out of the lineup, really starting to show his age. Now, biting us a little bit, the resurgence he's had in San Antonio with the young man Victor Wembanyama, who is now out for the rest of the season. So that's an opportunity I'd like to see the Suns capitalize on more or less, is banking on the Spurs taking a step back and missing out on a playoff spot, because they're really turning around their season. But I think having Wemby out now is definitely going to be a detriment to that team. Now, Mike, I want to address what you were saying real quick, because you're right. Twitter is just a crazy wasteland hive of scum and villainy where people are the most keyboard warrior that you could possibly be, in very, very, very hostile environment, even more so than r/SunsReddit. But people need to remember, what we're at, how many wins right now? We're at 27 wins. In 2018-2019, DeAndre Ayton's rookie year, the Suns had 19 wins, guys. They only won 19 games. That means what? They lost 63 or something like that? Like, give me a break. This is not the worst Suns team we've ever seen. Of course, we always have to mention the Eric Bledsoe era. And it's funny because there were so many other guys on that team that were equally terrible, if not worse. But Eric Bledsoe was just the shining, sore pain point of that team, where it will always be defined as the Eric Bledsoe era. But I don't know, man. I really, it's hard for me, if I'm being honest with myself, to pinpoint where it all went wrong. Was it the KD trade? Was it the Bradley Beal trade? If I had to guess, it probably was the Bradley Beal trade. But also getting rid of DeAndre Ayton for Yusuf Nurkic. We remember we got rid of Ayton, that's fine. But we also got rid of Toumani Kamara, who is finding and making a name for himself in Portland. This season, he's averaging 10 points, 6 rebounds, and 2 assists. Mike, it's still his rookie year, right? Or is this his second year now?
No, this is his second year.
Second year, okay.
Yeah, he had a very nice outing the other night, 20-point double-double. The energy that guy plays with on a consistent basis is just sorely what this Phoenix Suns team is missing, right? But Chris, you asked the right question, I think, is where did it all start to go wrong? And I don't know if you guys were able to take a listen to Gambo going on this show, the Kevin O'Connor show, a guy who's followed the NBA since, I think, 2014. But they had a great in-depth discussion in regard to kind of how the past moves over the past three seasons since Kevin Durant has come about have put the Suns in the predicament that they are in. And one of the glaring factors, I think, that a lot of people are leaning towards is, I still don't think it was the Kevin Durant trade, but it really comes down to the Chris Paul for Bradley Beal situation, knowing the contract that Bradley Beal had with the no trade clause. You know, they talked about, well, at that point, Golden State really wanted to get off Jordan Poole. Maybe you take that flyer, because if it doesn't work out, you know, Jordan Poole might not fit the system, but he is a tradable asset. He is still a very young player and shows flashes within this league. But having to mortgage so many more picks in order to get Bradley Beal here and get Chris Paul out the door handcuffs you and puts you in this same situation. Chris, I think the biggest issue for this Phoenix Suns team and where they sit was not giving Kevin Durant a full year with Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton, and Devin Booker, right? What do we always say? Hindsight is 20/20 at the end of the day, right? We're not having these discussions if the Phoenix Suns are a top three team in the Western Conference, looking to gain momentum in the last 20 games, going into the playoffs and seeing what they can do, basically kind of at their last ditch effort anyways, with Kevin Durant being 37 years old and only getting older every single day. But one of the other things that Gambo had said too, which I think was a very interesting take and something that you have to keep in mind with what Matt Ishbia has done in his time frame of taking over as the Phoenix Suns owner, was the trade of Kevin Durant was talked about, right? We talked about it in the summer before Matt Ishbia even came in. There were so many rumblings about it. And for lack of what we thought Robert Sarver was as an owner, you might say, was he was kind of smart enough to see the writing on the wall of what you have to keep in regard to assets when you're bringing in that big of a player. They talked about when Robert Sarver was the owner, they were okay with Mikhail, Cam, and Jay Crowder being the swap for Kevin Durant or the picks. It couldn't be both. And that's why nothing ever got done. And as soon as Matt Ishbia stepped in the door, he wanted the flashiness and he wanted to call that move. And we had to give up all of those picks. And now the Houston Rockets basically hold all of our cards as we sit here with, you know, a glimmering light, obviously, on this season, but for the future, until we move Kevin Durant and get some of these assets back and start recouping where this franchise needs to be, which is a winning franchise. So when you are struggling comparative to where you thought you were going to be or the expectations, this is where all of these conversations start to stem from and you go back, right? What went wrong? Who was the main culprit? How did this not work out, you know? But then we can ask Ian, didn't work out in Brooklyn either. So, you know, maybe it's Kevin Durant. I don't know. There's going to be a lot of conversations in the offseason, especially when Kevin Durant eventually gets traded, that we're going to have some nice juicy conversations about where it all truly went wrong.
I think that's the saddest thing at this point, is that Kevin Durant is, for better or worse, your most movable asset, to where you're going to be able to get something in return for him. But then that begs the question that's been on my mind is, can you rebuild or reset a team around Devin Booker and Bradley Beal? I think if you ask any Suns fan, they would want Bradley Beal to be the first one to go and then see what you can build around Booker and Durant. But Bradley Beal is just stubborn and gonna clinch on to his no trade clause for as long as he can. And I guess I get it if he likes living here, if you can find another location that he's happy with. But then it's like, then you have to find a team that's willing to take him. And for $50 million a year, I think soon to be $60 million for the next two seasons or so, not worth it for any team to even take a flyer on him. I mean, guys, I was sharing with you this list of the injuries he's had since he's been here. And this isn't even, I don't even know if this is all of them, but let's just run through it real quick. Starting in October of 2023, we got him in June. The season starts in October, mind you. It was a back injury, an ankle, a nose, an ankle, a hamstring. He was just resting. a finger, an elbow, a calf, a knee, a hip, an ankle, a toe recently. We were just talking about this on the Heat Check podcast earlier this month. A freaking big toe injury. My guy. Like, I don't know if Bradley Beal is just made of glass, Anthony Davis style, or if he doesn't take care of himself. Really not sure what it is. Yeah, and this was the list I pulled from on Fox Sports here. It's insane because this, and it was funny, as I've been talking about making this list, and it was like right there under my nose the whole time. But so Bradley Beal, unmovable piece. Can you rebuild with two guards and no center? I mean, we're starting Nick Richards and Bol Bol at center. Mason Plumlee is virtually, you know, a non-factor. I mean, I guess in this game here with Memphis, he's logged 17 minutes, has a couple field goals, handful of rebounds, but he's not supposed to be a big minutes guy to where Nick Richards is a liability at the end of the game. So you either have to have Bol Bol out there playing center. He doesn't have the body on him. He has the height, doesn't have the body. So you either, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. Do you put the younger Nick, more athletic Nick Richards, who statistically speaking is not good in late game? Or do you put out Mason Plumlee, who is a veteran, maybe a little bit of a smaller guy, but older, slower, not as athletic as Nick Richards? It's like, it's a tough position to be in. And it just goes back to everything we were talking about with the lackluster defense, the laziness on the offensive side as far as passing goes. I watched a whole compilation of Kevin Durant making impossible shots with hands in his face, and that's great. That's really awesome for the highlight reel, but it's not a good shot. And Kevin Durant would be the first one to tell you that those aren't good shots, so at least he's aware of it. But is he playing like that out of necessity, or is that genuinely the offense that Mike Budenholzer has drawn up where we're having guys go in these one-on-ones? I think you're right. I think moving KD is inevitable. I wish they would have ran it back one season. You know, lock DeAndre Ayton in a room, or lock all of them in a room, make them sing Kumbaya and figure it out. I mean, at the end of the day, you guys are all professionals. You don't have to love each other. You just got to play hard. And it seems like now it's just unraveling. There's so many rumors about everything falling apart in the locker room, and you can only believe so much of that. But I'm sure you guys have heard about this breaking the last couple days, the ripple effect of, I think it was yesterday on the Bickley and Murata show on Arizona Sports. Dan Bickley did his Bickley blast. And here's part of it. I'll just read it. He said, Booker is eligible for a 3-year, $212 million extension, and he simply is not worth $70 million a season. There was a time when Book was a real killer, a time when he was better than Donovan Mitchell. Neither is longer the case. And in my darkest moods, I fear the arrival of KD has had a terrible chilling effect on our hometown hero. Either way, the Suns are about to enter a gnarly stretch of the schedule, and the forecast for zombie basketball is very high. In other words, it's going to get worse before it gets better. And Kevin Durant caught wind of that. And you know Kevin Durant's got those Twitter fingers. He's got burners, but now he's just doing it right on his main. He said, is he serious? No way this is the narrative they're running with in Phoenix. No way I'm hearing this right. And I tuned in on the way to work, and they were talking about this morning. And they posed a great question, because I'm kind of with them in a sense where, you know, Kevin, is that the narrative we're running with? Maybe, but what narrative do you want us to run with? This team is absolute garbage. You guys aren't winning games. You had such high expectations and you're falling flat. Do you want the narrative to be like, oh, Kevin, you had 30, 35 points. You did so great, but we lost by 10. You know, like, what are we actually supposed to be talking about here? And so I guess I'll pass it over to you guys before this rant goes on too far. And Tallman, maybe start with you here. Do you think it's valid to say that it's possible Kevin Durant has had an effect on Devin Booker? And the fact he said chilling effect, I think, is a direct shot at Devin Booker's comment earlier in the season when they asked him about a tough loss and he said, I'm chilling. It's not what you want to hear.
No, not at all. And I just want to touch real quick on Bickley's, his blast. He was saying today that he was getting so much heat, someone told him to go kill himself for that.
Yeah,
which that is crazy, man. Yeah, which obviously that type of behavior is not cool, especially when it comes to sports where it's children games and who gives a shit at the end of the day. I mean, come on. But people are passionate, right? And this is a very frustrating time to be a Suns fan. And I don't know. I mean, it's because we all know it's been said repeatedly, Kevin Durant isn't a leader. He leads by example. He just wants to play basketball, right? And then we've said it before. It's like, okay, well, when is Devin Booker going to step up and be the alpha male that everybody wanted from Jimmy Butler coming to town, right? And I don't want to talk about Jimmy Butler, but look what happened to the Warriors after he came there, after that trade deadline. They look like a different team. They're playing with a different energy. But at what point do you sit there and say, okay, Book, this has been your team for so long, and then you're at that point where you're the bona fide superstar, yet you don't make an all-star team this year. But when are you going to take it over? When are you going to stop just trying, not saying he's trying to give way to Kevin Durant, but I mean, I understand him. He's got to get to the point where he says, fuck it. I don't care if you're a legend, right? If you fuck up, I'm going to say something. When is he going to be the top guy? I mean, we know Kevin Durant's all cool. You know, he's already proven himself. He's already won NBA championships. He's whatever, top 10 in scoring. This guy, he's going to the Hall of Fame. He's already done what he's supposed to do. So with him in that cool mentality, you can't sit here and not think that it has some type of effect or some type of a rubbing off effect onto Booker, because I already said it earlier. I mean, this seems like a season where he stepped back a little bit, right? I mean, he was inconsistent shooting. He would score 30 points one game, and then he'd score 14 or 12 the other game. And it's just like, it's like he doesn't question what he's questioning, what his role is. He'll score 12 points and have like 14 assists, but then other games he'll score 35 points and have 3 assists. So it's like, I don't know. Is he USA Olympic basketball Devin Booker, or is he going to be the Devin Booker that the Phoenix Suns need and be the leader of the team, be a perennial all-star, and just get back to elevating his game? So, but I mean, what was the max extension? It was 3 years, 210.
Yeah. 212, which is about 70 million a year. Yeah. That's
a lot of money.
I don't know why we're bringing that up already, because Book is guaranteed for the next 3 seasons.
Yeah.
So it won't be till like 2028, 2029 season.
And or Booker, 2930 season. Beal will be off the books. So it's not like HBO is not going to have the money, but right. I mean, how long is he going to be paying that much out of pocket for a team that just is not good?
Well, and that's one of the other things that at least Matt HBO is seeing the writing on the wall. He came out and said that we can't live in the second apron forever. This was the last ditch effort. After this, you have to make adjustments, right? I want to go back to the Dan Bickley thing and Kevin Durant a little bit for just a second, because I see why Kevin Durant might ask this question specifically when you start talking about Devin Booker. But I think it's a little bit hard for players who are in the system, this is their job every day to day, to look at fully in the future comparative to what's right in front of them, right? They're focused on trying to put it together, getting a little bit of camaraderie with each other and make some kind of a playoff push here. But what these guys do and who work in the media, they're looking at a little bit more of the full spectrum of the organization and what is ahead, right? We know what we don't have, which is draft picks. The Houston Rockets control basically all of our first round draft picks for the next, 3 seasons, whatever. If the Phoenix Suns don't make the playoffs and are in the lottery, we don't even get to get that pick. So it doesn't make sense for this team to be tanking at this point. That's where I go kind of fall it back into, well, if you're going to trade Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, you'll get a lot of nice young pieces, but you won't have players that will get you wins right now, right? You'll be kind of, I don't think you would be as bad as the Charlotte Hornets or the Washington Wizards. You'll be able to get some good capital, but you're going to have to be waiting for some time to see if these draft picks pan out to be anything. But going back to exactly what Kevin Durant is saying, and I think, Chris, you touched on it as well, and it says it right here where Bick says, well, what's the alternative narrative here? You guys had expectations. You are falling so far behind them. This is where you've put us. You've put us into a situation of wondering on what are the next steps, and that includes getting rid of 2 superstars who cannot put it together. We have the tape. We know what they are. It's not winning basketball. It's not going to get it done. You literally have made all of these changes from season over season, and it is getting worse. So what's going to change next year when these guys get a little bit older? I do have a question for Tallman. This kind of goes back to the basketball. You know, watching that San Antonio Spurs game last week was absolutely horrendous. You had 8 days off. Guys are fully rested. Everybody's healthy. And you completely fall flat in the second half. And the big narrative around that was, where the hell is Ryan Dunn? A guy who can really play some decent defense, can help out on the perimeter. De'Aaron Fox was going nutso on Grayson Allen. And the guy gets 2 minutes. Tallman, if we are at the point of starting Bol Bol and giving Nick Richards more time frame, and it seems like Mike Budenholzer is just throwing dartboards at the wall trying to figure something out, why is Ryan Dunn, a guy for a handful of games who was in the starting lineup, now on the outside looking in and not given an opportunity when you need to start developing some of these young talent if we see the writing on the wall that some of these guys aren't going to be here in the future? What's going on with that?
Man, I know. I mean, it's I don't remember when it happened, and I don't think he missed one game, but he was dealing with a foot injury. And then ever since that came out, it's just his time, because he was playing 25, 30 minutes a game consistently. I mean, we all remembered, was it January 6th or 7th, where the news came out, it was all over ESPN, you couldn't miss it. The Suns are benching Bradley Beal in an attempt to piss him off and get him to waive his no trade clause, but they're benching him in favor of a rookie and Ryan Dunn. And he's exactly what this team needs. Granted, I had to pull up the Suns injury report because I had a feeling that where this was going to go, but he's not even listed on there. I mean, that just made me totally forget that we got Cody Martin, but he's got a sports hernia, so don't expect him back anytime soon, which that's great. But it's just I don't get it, because exactly what it was a great plan to stick him in, send Beal to the bench, because he gives you in that starting rotation somebody that can play defense out on the perimeter, which we are just absolutely atrocious at. And it gives you a young athletic piece that we just don't really have in that starting lineup. I mean, Bobo's great and all, but he's a defensive liability. Yeah, he'll get you two, maybe three blocks a game just because he's just got a freakish figure. But the guy's not stopping anybody coming in the lane. He's just not. I mean, we already said it. He just doesn't have the body for it. So I don't know. I don't know that's the golden question. What happened to Ryan Dunn? Whose wife did he sleep with to get 2 minutes in a game? You know, it's
maybe he pulled the J Rich.
I mean, especially at this point where, I mean, I guess you could argue that, hey, we already did the Ryan Dunn experience. You know, we already gave him that shot. Now we need to pivot, because what we're doing was we're sending us downwards when we needed to start trending upwards. I mean, but that still doesn't make sense why he's not the sixth or seventh guy that comes off the bench and plays a consistent set of minutes. It just, I don't know. And then I don't know how to explain the Bol Bol in the starting lineup. Maybe one of you guys do.
Chris, you can take that, because I don't know.
I mean, I guess you don't want to have an undersized Royce O'Neal starting at the four. You don't want to move Kevin Durant to the four, where he would probably slot in pretty good, but you like him at the three. It's just lack of options, man. Like, the Suns are just out of options, and they're throwing anything at the wall and trying to see what sticks at this point. And it's sad. It's honestly sad, because if any Suns fan is being honest with themselves, there's no chance of us doing any, like, making the playoffs is questionable at this point, but doing anything in the playoffs is out of the question, to where all the conversations are centered around what are they going to do in the offseason. Like, this season already doesn't matter anymore, and there's still a solid, what, 20 games left? More than 20 games? And that's sad, man. Like, I think it's even harder, like we've talked about, because of the expectations, and everyone felt like we were still in a championship window. I mean, you have what we thought were three of the best players in the league, at least three top 50, if not top 25. Now I would say only two of those guys qualify for that conversation. But when you have such star power, you have high expectations. I mean, shit, even look at all these nationally televised games we still have coming up. ESPN three times, ABC twice, TNT once. The NBA, or TNT twice, the NBA expected the Suns to be a top seed in the West, being playing competitive games and being entertaining, and they're anything but, dude. Like, yeah, we're beating Memphis right now, and I think it was Kellen Olsen this afternoon on Arizona Sports, and hate to keep bringing them up, but they're the ones that are on 24/7 in the Valley talking Arizona Sports. He made a good point that coming up here in the next 20 or so games, the Suns are going to have to win five or six straight, and they're going to have to start stacking wins in order to give anybody any kind of faith that this team is going to do anything, quite frankly. It's really quite pathetic.
But where is that, right? You look at the schedule, that's the thing. What is it, the second toughest schedule down the stretch here? You got back-to-backs with New Orleans. But then we think about, yeah, we got Chicago and Toronto back-to-back again. What did we looked horrible against both of those teams. We barely pulled it out against Chicago. Obviously, we give up the six straight three-pointers down the stretch against Toronto and get demolished down the stretch. We're losing consistently throughout that game. Guys, I don't even know if I see five wins on the rest of this schedule here, right? Because that's how, you want to say it, down bad it seems like we are right now. Where our record doesn't show that, the Phoenix Suns will be able to pull things out and get some wins, probably unexpectedly. But I think that kind of goes back to the question about Ryan Dunn or some of these other young guys like Osu Ikodoro. When you're in the front office and the franchise and the guys that are on the floor every day, you have faith that you'll be able to turn it around. But I think the fan base right now has really looked at each other. And Chris, you said it. This is a lost season. Why at this point not try and play some of your young guys to see what you have and get them that NBA game experience, which is so crucial for guys' development? That's why I was very excited how the season started. I was a little bit concerned by how much specifically Osu Ikodoro was playing because I didn't think he was there yet. But the way that they were using Ryan Dunn, giving him some early opportunities to start when he needed to fill in based off of injuries, and then to completely cut him, and especially like Osu don't even sniff the floor whatsoever, even at all. He's not even a thought to be a part of the rotation. This is a lost season. Start playing these guys and see what you really have. Because like you guys have already said, this offseason is going to be crucial to what will be the Phoenix Suns organization for probably at least the next 3 years. And you need to know if these are guys you can build around or they have to be part of these big level trades to bring in absolutely brand new faces when you trade Kevin Durant and hopefully Bradley Beal and maybe Devin Booker when it comes down to it. But you got to play these young guys at this point.
Whoa, Mike, don't want you getting any bad messages now based off saying trade Booker.
Don't worry. I get plenty of bad messages at work already. What's another
one? Oh, yeah. I was going to say me too. I had a day full of bad messages. But what's funny is, you know, the last, 50 minutes, or maybe we started with a lot of DT, but the last, 30, 40 minutes, we've been just talking absolute shit about the Suns. And then you look at the game they're playing right now. Granted, they had a 10-point lead that they actually absolutely pissed away earlier at the end of the third quarter, but you got the big three actually showing up. And then I talked smack about Grayson Allen not shooting threes. He's 5 for 8 from 3-pointer with 17 points. But what's scary about it is, like, you got Bol Bol at 25 minutes, you got Plumlee at 20 minutes. And I think really just the question to the answer is, why is Bol Bol starting? Is, I think Chris nailed it. There's just no other options. I mean, Who else are you going to put in there? I don't know. But again, Ryan Dunn, 6 minutes, and you're 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. He's played 6 minutes.
Oh, sorry. And I think that's another thing, though, that it, going back to what we were talking about before, where, I mean, granted, he's not a whole lot bigger, but when we talk about needing forwards on this team, and we gave up a guy like Tumani Kamara, who, granted, he was a rookie, or just coming off his rookie season when we moved him, but seems like we could really use a young guy like that right now, where it's like we have this mixed bag of basically rookies and then a bunch of old guys. And I think that a lot of them are just starting to show their age, like the Royce O'Neals, the Mason Plumleys, even Kevin Durant to some extent, like Grayson Allen. I mean, Grayson Allen has the most gray hair out of any of them. It's concerning. It's concerning.
He's only 29, man.
Well,
those Duke days added a whole bunch of gray on him, man. He was getting massacred in the media and
2 years older than him.
Yeah, that's true. He definitely was the biggest villain coming out of college. But I don't know, guys.
He does look 40 years old. Sorry.
Yeah. No, he does.
Yeah, he looks old as hell.
No, I was just gonna say though, we got a month and a half left of this season. It's too late for them to turn it around and convince me to get back on board, unless they win out. Unless they win out and we can somehow win 15 out of the next 20 games, it's not gonna happen. I have zero faith, but we'll keep talking about them. We'll keep checking in and speculating on the future. Who's going? Who's staying? Beal is gonna stay for the next two seasons, no matter what. We're stuck with him, like, I don't know, like glue. I couldn't think of a good analogy, but I just needed to get all that off my chest. I'm glad we aired it out. But guys, there is some other news that is a little bit more uplifting, perhaps. The prospect of baseball returning right around the corner. Games are being played aplenty in the Valley right now as spring training is kicked off and is chugging right along. Diamondbacks have made some moves, more or less. They've made some signings we've touched on, but also some re-signings. We got Geraldo Perdomo under contract, 4 years, $45 million. He'll be secured in the infield, likely shortstop, maybe a little second base mixed in there. Also, of course, the big acquisition of Corbin Burnes. We finally got to see him take the mound. I think he had a pair of strikeouts in his spring training debut. And so I want to get to that topic about the opening day starter between him and Gallen. Gallen's on the last year of his deal. There's been speculation of the D-backs potentially moving him, having such a stacked starting pitching rotation as it is right now. But first, I do want to talk about the Perdomo deal and the implications of that a little bit, because we already know that waiting in the wings, we had Jordan Lawler. We've just been waiting for him to come up and play, get time at short. And Tallman, help me out here. Who's the other good shortstop prospect we have?
Oh, you talk about Jordan Lawler?
Or Tommy Troy, is that? Yeah, Jordan Lawler. What was I saying?
Who's Tommy Troy?
Is that? Yeah, Tommy Troy. That's a guy. Yeah. How did it flip where you know basketball now and I know baseball? That's rude.
I don't think I fucking know anything.
It's because Thomas he goes through the phases, right? He's like change of the wind, right? Basketball, just give it another month, Chris, and then it'll he'll be over here, and then try and ask him another basketball question. It might be tough.
That's true. Tommy Troy is the number five prospect in our organization, and he's also a shortstop. So two of our top five prospects are shortstops. Jordan Lawler is number one right now. So, you know, more or less a logjam at shortstop. It's honestly a good position to be in. And I'm hearing a lot of discourse online of people saying that we should keep Jordan Lawler as well as Geraldo Perdomo, and they can kind of mix in and out. I don't know if I agree. I think you should try and move off of Lawler and get something in return, a big bat, something we can use now. And I mean, shit, if you pair Gallen and Lawler in the same trade, that could be a really big name signing potentially. I don't know. I want to pick your brains and see what you guys think about. Should he stay or should he go as far as it pertains to Jordan Lawler and potentially Tommy Troy, even though Tallman has no idea who Tommy Troy is. This is the first time he's heard his name, but
whatever. That was a shot. All right. Sing the song. Should he stay or should he go?
Down.
Wait, yeah.
That's the wrong song. No, that's not it. Should I stay or should I go?
Yeah, there you go. All right. Tom, I guess I'm going to have to go do a fucking book report on Tommy Troy after this, just to make up for that. What's great about it is, okay, so you have two good shortstop prospects, right? Just because you secured Perdomo, he's obviously going to be our starter moving forward. It's like, there's no reason to just automatically think you have a good baseball player. I just looked up, he's the 11th prospect in all of MLB. Jordan Lawler is. So you have a good baseball player who is finally getting to that point. He already saw a little bit of action with the September call-ups last season, right? Just because there's someone ahead of him, I mean, come on, he's an infielder. There's no reason to think you can't move him over to start at third base, or he can't play second base. I mean, yeah, I know we got Gino for a bit, but Gino's not our long-term answer, right? You know, we've had a revolving door at third base forever. Can he adopt that position and play it well and be our solid third baseman going forward for the future? I mean, Ketel Marte, I know he's getting past that age. He's not a spring chicken. Just kidding. He's going to be the MVP this season. But I mean, it's the thing with the infielders is, you know, these guys are, I mean, to be shortstop, you're one of the most versatile players on the team, right? If you're shortstop, you're the best infielder on the team. If you're the starting shortstop, that's the best player plays shortstop. That's just how it's always been since Little League days. That's how it tends to be. You know, you're the captain of the infield when you're the shortstop in the major leagues. So it shouldn't be something where, you know, just because you have Perdomo, you got to ship, you should ship him out. Right. I mean, we see prospects being traded every single week in baseball. I mean, you could look up our farm system list right now. 85% of those guys will never play for the Diamondbacks in the major leagues. But just because, I don't know, I'm not in favor of shipping Jordan out, but you bring up a great point, or sorry, not a point, a great idea of the potential return you could get if you traded Zach Gallen and one of the top prospects in baseball. I mean, I don't know. I could be interested in that, but I don't think, I mean, especially how we are handcuffed, the Arizona Diamondbacks are handcuffed when it comes to how much money we spend. I know we're in the top 10 or 12 in payroll, but I'm always going to have that mentality until we are consistently proven wrong by ownership on a year in and year out basis of being a top spender in baseball. I'm still going to have that fear mentality that this team and ownership is not going to spend big bucks for players. So that's why when you have these good prospects coming up and they have a ton of team control at not a lot of money, you got to hold on to those as much as you can if you're going to play Diamondbacks baseball in a division with the Giants, the Padres, and the Dodgers. It's just how this team's going to be, how we're going to have to succeed going forward. So I'm not in favor of it. Unless it's just like, it just makes so much sense, but I can't even speculate right now on what that would be.
I'm aligned, 100% aligned. I think Tolman, you touched on a beautiful thing too with Eugenio Suarez, great second half of the year last year, but he's kind of just, you know, the holdover, right? A good holdover, but man, I don't want another situation like a Dansby Swanson, where we're letting him go super early and then he goes to contribute to a World Series winning team with the Atlanta Braves. Jordan Lawler is only 22 years old. And it sounds like they've been kind of working him out last season over at third base a little too, to see what he's made of. I think if somebody is that great of a talent, they'll be able to translate. You just have to give him time. But, you know, maybe he gets, you know, every other day with the Eugenio, and then obviously those days where Perdomo gets off, he's going to fill in there as well. But I think it's crucial to keep your real top valued guys right now in the infield, even though you got shored up at second base with Ketel Marte and now Geraldo Perdomo. He's a guy that I don't want to just let walk away, even if it's for a huge bag, because I think there's just so much promise that he might have as a future for this club. And he can be kind of a cornerstone along with Perdomo if he fits in at third base. And then you're talking about a three-headed monster with Corbin Carroll. That is just an absolute young unit, right? I don't want to get rid of him. Now, Chris, if you're talking about Andrew Jones, I already know where you sit on that. I think we are filled with outfielders. If that's one of your top prospects that you want to go out and move to get a big haul, I'll take the step back on that where I was, right? That's normally what happens. We move along with the times and we start adjusting as we need to see fit. But I think Jordan Lawler, especially getting that opportunity to be in the clubhouse during the World Series run and getting healthier, giving him opportunities, I think he's going to be a great player for this club. But Chris, I do want to transition over to your other main question, which is starting pitchers, starting guys, Corbin Burnes or Zach Gallen. What are you thinking right now, man?
I heard some of the arguments about this where, you know, people are saying, do you use it as a carrot to try and see if Zach Gallen is willing to take a hometown discount and renegotiate and stay here a little bit more? Do you give it to him as a token of gratitude for how well he's pitched for this organization since he's been here and, you know, his continued success? It doesn't have to be where one guy or the other is our ace. We can have both of them be, you know, a 1A or 1B, which we've said that about several groups of guys in the past two seasons. But this is a true time where I think it as long as both guys are healthy and they're still pitching at a high level, that's going to be the case. I don't know. I think, though, that Corbin Burnes, if you look at his resume, is just slightly more impressive than Zach Gallen. He's got a few more seasons under his belt than Gallen does. So he's a multi-time all-star. He's for all intents and purposes, a veteran at this point. You brought him in and he wanted to be here. It's not an easy question. And I wouldn't want to be Torrey Lovello having to make that decision, because I think there's a good case to be made, you know, both ways. And maybe I'm kind of stalling as I think about this out loud, but I'll maybe be on the controversial side of things. And I think that you start Corbin Burnes. I think he's probably going to be the better of the two. I think Zach took a little bit of a step back last season, so I'm not saying punish him by any means, but I think you give it to the new guy, the guy that's the proven stud that's done it for multiple seasons and didn't just have a one or two season flash in the pan. But before I let Tallman chime in on that, I do just have to go back just a little bit to play devil's advocate on that debate. I know you guys are worried. We got burned with Max Scherzer and Dansby Swanson, maybe moving off those guys a little bit early. But if you remember, the last great shortstop prospect we had that we moved off of resulted in Zach Gallen, and that was Jazz Chisholm. Obviously, the Miami Marlins are a dog shit organization, but Jazz did get traded to the Yankees last year, made it to the World Series. So he did find success eventually, and he is a great, great stud and a prospect, but it worked out for both teams. It was mutually beneficial. So if we can have another scenario like that, where we, like, that's what I'm saying, we get something in return for Lawler. I'm not saying we give him away for a bag of potato chips, guys. Just had to give my two cents on that. But Tallman, I'm saying Corbin Burnes. I'm going to stand on business here. What do you think?
Yeah, are they oven-baked potato chips? Because then I might be in – just kidding.
Kettle cooked.
Hey, that might be even better. No, good save there. Come on, guys. We're talking about – it's obviously going to be Corbin Burnes. I mean, I know you called the controversy. I think it's a no-brainer. It's going to be Corbin Burnes. I don't know. I don't see how it's not Corbin Burnes. He was the best. He was the top free agent in this offseason. And he's coming to Phoenix to play. He's playing right now in Phoenix, right? It's very obvious that Corbin Burnes is your best pitcher on this team. I mean, I get it. Your Gallen's started how many of the last seasons on opening day? I mean, shit, he started game one of the World Series when we were in there. You know, he's obviously been the top guy in that pitcher's rotation. He was one of the leaders in a sense. But you got to think about it. I mean, what we gave Corbin Burnes, what, 5 years, 200 and something million? I should know the contract by now, but we signed Corbin Burns to that long extension, threw all that money at him when Zach Allen is going to his last season before free agency. Zach Allen's not taking a hometown discount. I mean, he's got Scott Boras as an agent. That dude he's going to go out and try to get Zach the biggest goddamn bag he can get for him on free agency. He's testing the open market. So unless the D-backs put up and pay out something similar, if not more, to Burns, it's just not happening, right? So, I mean, 6 years, $210 million. I mean, that's a lot of money for us, right? I'm not saying, oh, Zach Allen's going to be the ex-girlfriend. We don't want him anymore. We're going to kick him to the curb because we have this nice new shiny toy. But I just don't see how Corbin Burns is not the new ace, the number one starter on this team. And if I was Torrey, I know he's got a really hard decision to make because you don't want to piss off Gallen. You know, I'd be starting Burns, but I know we know Gallen's not going to be on this team next season. At least I'm not. I'm willing to put money on it. At least we have him where he's going to go out there and pitch his ass off because maybe he does want to get that big ass bag of money with Scott Boras. So it's win-win for this season, but I just don't see how it's not Corbin Burns.
So here's the deal. At the end of the day, when organizations spend a lot of money to bring in guys, it's to make the team better, or at least that's what they're knocking on wood to do. They paid Corbin Burns $210 million to be the ace of this team. Why would you not just start right now? I understand what you guys are saying. You don't want to make Zach Gallen feel bad. Let's be honest as well. Zach Gallen has held up his end of the bargain in regard to what he can control in regard to being the ace for this team for the past couple of seasons. But I'm not in the camp of having to hold his hand and tell him that everything's going to be all right and tuck him in at the end of the night, right? This is another situation like Christian Walker, guys. Tolman, you said it correctly. He will go out, test the market, and he's going to get a very, very large payday next year. So it's almost like if you're Torrey Lovello, you need to see the writing on the wall once again. You go with Corbin Burns, and it's a great problem to have right now with two aces that could be your starting day guy, right? But you just have to be realistic, man. That's the biggest thing, I think, at the end of the day with all these people that it's like, why are we dancing around the fact that we know that Corbin Burns is going to be here at least for the next 3 to 4 years if something bad happens, then, you know, you might move off of him, but he's a four-time all-star. He's a guy who is just a certified ace. And like Chris said, too, is a guy who's been there and done that. Yes, Zach Gallen has done that here, but I feel like Corbin Burns has done that on a little bit bigger of a stage at this point in his career. I think it's an easy decision. You go with Corbin Burns. You got Zach Gallen as your number two. But the biggest thing that we're going to be keeping an eye on, I think, for this entire year is what guy steps up to be your certified number two for the future, right? You're hoping it's Eduardo Rodriguez, right? Setting himself up to be that big guy. You're hoping that Jordan Montgomery, after losing a couple of pounds, is going to be having a bounce back year and maybe can find himself back into the starting rotation. You're hoping that guys like Ryan Nelson take that bigger jump up, who can maybe even leapfrog Eduardo Rodriguez and become your certified number two. It's all about what the other guys do this year, I think, comparative to what Zach Gallen does, if this team is going to have success, not only this year, but in the future.
Sorry.
No, go for it, Thomas.
Super quick. We just got to hope that Jordan Montgomery and Josh Naylor don't hang out, because Josh Naylor might be a bad influence on Jordan Montgomery after he shed a little LBs, right? So that was a terrible overweight. That was an overweight joke.
Yeah.
Okay.
Keep the 4x4s from In-N-Out away from him is what you're saying.
Yeah, Naylor Tolman. As good as they are. Naylor Tolman. I barely know her. Okay. All right. Too many corny jokes. I'm sure we lost subscribers on this stream. But okay, I thought Corbin Burns was a controversial take. Apparently not. Apparently that's the consensus. I mean, He's won a Cy Young. Gallen is not. Four-time All-Star to Gallen's one. Had the stats up there. They're pretty close. Honestly, they are pretty close. But at the end of the day, this is a good problem to have, right? If we're having the debate on who is going to be our day one starter because both guys are worthy of it, it's not a bad position to be in. And you're absolutely right, Mike. There are guys waiting in the wings that we're looking and hoping will make a big leap. You didn't even mention Brandon Pfaadt, who is, I think, going into his third season now with the team. Really, really have high hopes for that kid. They tried to roll out Yulber Diaz last year. It's kind of up and down, a little bit bumpy, but I think that is the most beautiful thing about this team is it's a young, talented team. And even though we didn't make the playoffs last year, we won more games in the regular season than we did the year we went to the World Series. So if they're showing improvement year after year, we already know that our only path to the playoffs is through the wild card or the Dodgers team plane crashing, which, I mean, there's a lot of plane crashes happening right now. I mean, I don't want any bad things to happen, knock on wood, cross my fingers, but maybe if they all sprained their ankle and had to miss several months, that would be, maybe that's a little less ill-intended. I better stop before I get ahead of myself, but I'm excited. I'm excited that baseball is already happening. I'm very disappointed that MLB The Show 25 isn't going to be on Xbox Game Pass, and I'm actually going to have to pay full price for this. But that's another conversation. Yeah. Can you believe that shit? Might have to just play 24 for the foreseeable future, but.
Damn, that sucks. You just ruined my night, Chris.
I'm sorry. Blame Ian. He's the one who brought that to my attention a week or two ago. So,
God damn it, Ian.
Thanks, Kruver. But fellas, this has been fun. I think I'm ready to wrap it up here. Save some of these conversations for another day. But Mike, wanted to give you the floor if you have anything else you'd like to get off your chest.
Yeah. Do you guys mind if I do a little show and tell before we take off for the night?
Please.
Okay. So I know it's not football season, and we're heading into the off season. A lot of awesome things that are happening with the Cardinals as well. Monty Austinfort talking about, you know, they're going to be prudent and efficient in free agency. I think Michael Bidwell said that as well. But guys, I'm starting to kind of pick up my Arizona Cardinals card collection here. Okay, so I got a little nice little rookie Tip Ryman. Hey, nice little background right there.
Okay,
how about that? We got the new rook too, Trey Benson. Nice little rookie patch right there on the premier jerseys.
Oh, hell yeah.
I think this one is super cool. This is a Michael Carter rookie card from his time at North Carolina. And those are actually his gloves, game-worn gloves on that one. How about that?
Game-worn, not just player-worn? Yeah, game-worn? Wow.
So. Yeah. And then, of course, you know I saved the best for last. It's a Michael Wilson rookie card patch.
Hey, yo.
199. I don't know.
Why are you throwing your money away, Mike?
Might be heading straight to the Tallman household. We're going to start getting Tallman on the card train. And what a perfect way to start right here with a beautiful Michael Wilson patch. Guys, dude, it's always a pleasure.
Someone needs
Hold on.
They need to deactivate your whatnot account.
No. Let me finish my outro, okay? Tallman, that card's coming to you. Guys, always a pleasure, never a chore, as Christopher would say. Last thing I will say, I got to watch the Phoenix Suns for the first time outside of Arizona. Did see them lose to the Houston Rockets, but that was an awesome experience. If anybody ever has the chance to go see their favorite team outside of their state, you got to do it, man. It's always a bucket list item. That's all I got for tonight. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you, Michael. I love the show and tell. We might have to make that a segment. Maybe get that on the shorts, get that on the TikToks. But Tallman, any last corny jokes you have for us? Any puns or anything you'd like to get off your chest?
Damn. No, I wish I did. I'm about to have a heat stroke in my office, though. oh, shit. No, this has been fun, guys. Of course, we chose the night to do a live stream where we talked immense amount of shit about the Suns, and am I gonna jinx them? All right, there's 9 seconds left. We're up by 1 point, so let's all do a prayer right now so that we don't go off the deep end with a loss to a good team.
Good Lord, should we just pull this up here and watch the end of it?
Yeah, let's just
absolutely.
They were up by four And John Morant goes down in 5 seconds, knocks in a three. So the Suns are in a timeout right now. There's 9 seconds left. I would love to see them on the one game win streak here. I think
you got to start somewhere.
Wait a minute.
This is the beginning. This is the beginning. But what I was gonna say is I was talking about the upcoming schedule. It's not till the end of March where we have Boston twice and Milwaukee twice. But coming up here in the near future, why can't I find it now? We have two games with the Pelicans the end of this week on Thursday and Friday, and the Pelicans are a bottom feeder right now. They are.
But Chris,
didn't they beat us last time?
That don't even matter. This is the same thing. We're looking at basically every matchup. We're like, oh yeah, Toronto doesn't even have Brandon Ingram. They're one of the worst 3-point shooting teams, and they just absolutely demolished the Suns. I mean, the same thing happens to this same Memphis Grizzly team that we faced off in 2 weeks ago. They were missing what, like 7 guys, basically more than half of their starting lineup, and we got cooked in that one too. So it's like the bottom feeder thing for this basketball team, it just doesn't work right now, which is crazy, but it is the truth.
Exactly. That's the saddest thing though, right? Because like on paper you're like, this should be a dub, and like a year, even 2 years, especially 2 years ago, you would have been like, oh, dub for sure. But now, man, like it's not a sure thing, and Zion has actually been healthy and playing decent. So I'm just saying, like, when we talk about they need to go on a stretch and win a handful of games, if they can win against Memphis, win two against the Pelicans, maybe take some momentum into the next game against Minnesota. Holy shit, Grayson Allen misses a free throw.
Wow. He's short, too.
Wow, guys. This is...
Oh, here's Ryan Dunn to play the last 5 seconds.
Offensive team rebound. They foul again. Oh wait, this seems out of order.
What's happening?
Oh, he made the second free throw. Okay, it wasn't a team rebound. That's a lie. All right. On ESPN.
Wait, so now it's going to be a timeout, right?
Yep, yeah, timeout, Memphis. Timeout.
No, I think ESPN always does that when after the first free throw, and there's a second one, it'll always say like offensive team rebound. It's weird.
Oh.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make sense.
That seems like a program flaw.
Yeah, well, I
feel like ESPN should have fixed this point.
Yeah, no, I swear, I've watched this same thing on my phone because of sports bets before.
So I wonder though, because I always thought that, I'm sure it was the case before, where there's someone in front of a computer or some kind of deck, you know, entering the stats as they happen while they're watching the game live, maybe even a team of people. But I wonder, in this new digital era of AI and how smart computer processing is, if they don't just have a computer program watching these games and update it. Like, if not, if they don't already, I guarantee you they will in the very near future, because, man, that's kind of embarrassing if you're just trying to watch along and on ESPN and you think they got a rebound. Or like Tallman is sitting there watching his bet and he's like, oh, rebound, who was it? I only needed him to get one more.
It's got to be some kind of program, because you also have to think about all the different games that are going on, right? Like you got men's basketball or NCAA men's, NCAA women's, soccer, overseas stuff. Like you think they have, I know ESPN is a big conglomerate. They're under Disney, right? They run the world. But do you think they really have a dedicated like person just to watch the game and input these kind of things? Maybe. I don't know. They have a reporter for every professional team, it seems like, that is, you know, contracted or, you know, works for ESPN. But
I mean, that's the thing, though. You don't have to be in attendance. They made the two. Oh, my God.
1.4 seconds left. Oh, of course it was Ja.
Yeah, that was hell. He's a stud, man. I don't know how he made that.
Oh, you're actually watching the game?
Yeah.
You should.
So this is going to overtime, guys. This is going to overtime. And we're going to lose in overtime.
When the shot goes, or when the possession happens, you should turn your video over to the side so we can see it we can see the shot, and we'll keep you minimized so we don't get copyright.
it's on my TV. Yeah, I have too many cords, man. It's on my TV behind the laptop.
Making excuses.
Dude, I have like five screens, man, including my TV.
So this is the one thing that I do kind of hate about basketball, though, especially in close games. The last 2 minutes takes 25 to 30 minutes.
Brutal.
Because it's absolutely just
brutal.
And stoppage, timeout, drop a play. Okay, another timeout, foul.
It's like, God forbid they have to review something.
Oh.
Holy shit.
You could those are the night. Worst. Yeah, that's terrible.
Do we just want to leave it up to imagination for the people and call it a night?
Oh, I mean, I think we all know where this is headed, right? I mean,
yeah, I think it's about to start.
Don't say that. Don't say that. Bol Bol's coming into the game. He's going to they're going to throw one up at the basket. He's just going to tip it in.
I was going to say 1.4. I mean, what the Derek Fisher rule is, you need what, 0.3 seconds to get a shot off?
So you have time here.
You do have time.
You have time here, but you don't really have time for inbound, set a screen, get off.
Wait, what happened to Devin Booker? Of course it's Kevin Durant, and he missed it.
He missed it.
Yep.
All right.
Booker's not even on the floor for that.
But
all right.
It 1.4 seconds, you can probably get it in quick, get one dribble, but then you got to get up, right? It's not a lot of time. It's not like what we had to do against the Utah Jazz where you throw that over the top to the other side of the floor, pass to Grayson Allen, and he basically has to catch it in motion and put it up immediately. You can get one dribble off and get it up, but I'll be interested to see how KD missed another clutch shot. Who would have guessed?
Isn't that what we're paying him $50 million to be able to make shots like that?
It was not an easy shot.
Guys, and we need to change the narrative.
Everybody knew in the arena who was going to shoot that.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah, easily. I would have gone to Durant 10 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
And that's what I was talking about. He will make those tough contested shots, just apparently not when the game's on the line and there's 1.7 seconds left. But we'll have to keep an eye out for that one. I'm sure you guys will see it in the post game and on the social medias. I'm sure we might get a little Twitter post out about the conclusion of this game, but it's heading to overtime. I'm not optimistic, but fellas, this was a fun stream. I love the Heat Check Podcast Live. We'll be back next Tuesday for another live stream for you. We go live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. And like I said at the top, you can always catch us on the playback right here on YouTube or across any podcast streaming service. We'll be there. Valley Sports Plug. Google us. You'll find us. For Michael Benjamin and VSP Tallman, I'm Chris Patrick, and we'll see you next time. Peace.